This season for some people seems to be so inconvenient, and yet what is reflected in our time, our Christmas time, is the ordinariness that goes on in life anyway. It just seems magnified to some extent. The joys and the lows. This past week, I had those kinds of emotions, like many people. There was a great celebration right here in the church on Tuesday of a marriage, and we enjoyed that opportunity to celebrate with the couple. On Friday, I was unexpectedly taken to Montreal to attend a funeral of my best friend, who was best man at our wedding, whose mother died suddenly. And so this up and down is part of every day all through the year, but it seems to be highlighted at Christmas time. We think of the joy, for instance. You read that story of the young girl who, after years since the tsunami in Asia, South Asia, she had disappeared and was reunited with her family after all these years. Great joy and celebration in the village and the family members indeed. But you also read perhaps in the paper yesterday of the funeral for that 51-year-old man and his son that was killed on Highway 148 and the two women near Rockland, and the sadness abounds. Joy and sadness, all of that is gathered up into the Christmas story. And that is why it is so resonant and important for us to stay with the story, not to depart from it too quickly, because it is about our life and the life of the world. It is about the life of all the nations and the life of all ages, not only numerically, but through the epochs and seasons of our world's history. And it is for that reason that we are called to render pondering attention, intensive intention to the stories and what may be there. The text from the gospel lesson today gathers up the confluent streams of those things are right there in this story. And what I like about it is not only that it reminds us of the long history of God's promises to the people of Israel and to the nations. Remember that Abraham and Sarah were called and chosen and dispatched in order that they may be a blessing and their descendants to all of the nations. And here in this text, we see the nations are being remembered by God again, that it is for the nations that this consolation of Israel is intended. But it is also for all ages. Do you notice how the Christmas story gathers up people of every age? Sometimes I hear people saying, Christmas is just for kids. You ever hear that? It's just for the kids. In this story, this extended story of Christmas, we do have a baby. Now, sometime later, we have a little infant. This baby has grown, come for purification. We have a teenage mother. Mary is a teenager. Joseph probably a little older, maybe in his early 20s. The merchants who are in the temple, who are sharing their wares and providing the animals for sacrifice, would have been probably in their 30s and so forth. We also have here mentioned two seniors, two elder saints, as it were, Simeon and Anna. All ages are both imagined and involved in the drama of this story. This story is for everyone. All ages. This story is for all nations. This story is for wherever you are in your life, in your disposition now. Whether sadness or bemoaning a loss of ability, the loss of relationship, the loss of a loved one, this story gathers and captures all of that. That's why Christmas matters so much to the world and to us. It is not something to be so frivolously let go of, so frivolously dismissed, to get on with the real stuff of life again. Mary and Joseph are told here, come to fulfill the law. What normally happened, there would have been, which we see in the verses just preceding what we read from Luke today, there is the circumcision 8 days after the Jewish male son is born. There's a circumcision. And then they go away for a time and come back after 40 days for a male, which is the time of purification, both for the mother and the offering of that child to God. And they come back to fulfill that at the temple. So they are a family that we see very early on take very seriously their faith and the rituals of their faith. They take seriously the fact that they see and perceive God in the very fabric woven through all of their lives. And they are committed, despite their economic situation, they're committed to offer what is necessary. We know that they are economically poor because they offer two birds. And normally you would offer a lamb if you had the money. But provision was made for those who are poor. But the sacrifice that they offer suggests that they are poor indeed. But something happens when they come. Something happens. There are two people in the temple, one who visits regularly, and the other, we're told, Anna, who is there all the time. Simeon, whose name in Hebrew means God hears, has been waiting a long time. You think that things are bad when you have to wait in line at the bank or wait in traffic or wait for a bus? Simeon's been waiting a long time. He's an older man now. But he has been given the promise by the Spirit that he will not die until he sees what's called the consolation of Israel, the one who has come to rescue and to redeem and to make right that which God has promised, both for the Jews and for all Gentiles. And he comes and he addresses Mary because something has stirred in him, and he perceives with more than his eyes, there is a discernment somehow communicated through the Spirit that this child, this one, is different. Now, imagine on a human level Mary's shock, really, when this elderly man addresses her, because men would not generally address women in public. Jewish men would not do that, let alone speak to them directly. And so this would have startled her to some extent, but he is dispensing with the normal protocol because something urgent has welled up within him, and he has to communicate this. He has to declare this, declare all of it, not just some of it, all of it. For yes, this is the evidence of the consolation, the promise of God to redeem Israel and redeem the world. Here it is in this child. But he doesn't pull any punches. He speaks the whole truth, that this is not going to come easily. This is going to cause great hardship, great heartbreak. For this, yes, the light of the world, but you know that every light casts shadow. That some are not going to be welcoming the invitation and the intrusion into their reality, into their hearts, into their motives, into their lives, into their casualness with which they approach faith or whatever. They will not welcome that. They will fight against it. And Jesus, we know as he grew up, encountered this. But he is saying to him, this child has come to fulfill God's promise, but it's going to be a tough ride. Right from the very beginning. Who wants to hear that? You and I know, and many in our congregation are celebrating, and we with them, the arrival of a new birth, a new child in the family. We celebrate that, and people love and look for the potential and the possibility of that child. Who wants to hear at the very outset that this child is going to encounter hardship and is going to cause hardship, even as this child brings about the redemption of the world? Who wants to hear that? But God would have it no other way than the way of truth. And into their lives are offered this particular vision. One of the things that is important to realize is that Jesus then is shown as an insider, as it were. When he comes later on to argue about the interpretation of the law and to wrestle with people about God's intention, he's doing so from the inside, not an outsider. He has followed the law. His parents did that. They raised him and taught him. He has been instructed by the rabbis. He has come up in the faith, as it were. We're told as an adult that he went regularly to worship in synagogue, as was his custom. So he comes to speak a word that is more expansive than any of the imaginations, both of Israel or even the church today. That word is that all the nations, all the well-being of all ages, is welcomed into the heart of God for redemption. One of the things that Simeon recognizes with accommodates that theme of death, he realizes that he has been stewarding this promise. He is not going to be permitted to die until he sees this. And then he says what has become known as the Nunc Dimittis in Latin. It's just the first words in this particular song or prayer that he offers. Now allow your servant to depart. Dismiss your servant, for the promise of your word has come. Simeon is calling on all who would pay attention to focus on this child. And what is it about this child, this Christ, that can speak to you and to me? It's very interesting that, as Fred Craddock says, he wrote, "Jesus will bring truth to light and in so doing throw all who come in contact with him into a crisis of decision. In that decision, rising and falling, life and death result. Jesus precipitates the centrally important movement of one's life toward or away from God." So that is what we are invited to ponder. How is this little child throwing light on our movement towards or away from God? What is it that we must take stock of in our resolution making? What must we at the onset of this new year take stock of in our faith, in our life? That's a pondering question. For Jesus comes not to leave us as we are, but to provoke us into the realization that we must live life intentionally, taking steps towards God or recognizing where we are walking away from God. Where we are walking away from what God intends and desires for all of us, for each age and for all the nations. One of the things that I find interesting here is that this Jesus did not come down with a powerful army, did not come to trounce all people who do bad, as it were. But this baby comes to work on our hearts. That takes longer and it's harder. This baby comes to work on our hearts to see if we could, that those hearts could be captured and those lives can be changed from the inside out, and says God's love is being poured out into you and demands and summons a response. What are we as infants and children and teenagers and young adults and those in the middle years and seniors, all with gifts to add to the community? What will we say and how will we respond to that invitation? Here is the gift. Here is the crisis of decision that is being offered to you. What will you and I do? How will we respond? It's interesting that Anna, the prophetess, who has been there constantly praying and fasting, fulfilling her spiritual duties and committing indeed to perceive, reminds us of something. It reminds us that we do not value as much as we ought to the gifted wisdom and what seems like foolish commitment of our elder saints. Too often I find, and so do you, Barbara can attest to this and others who go through our pastoral care team and visit at the senior citizen residences where I do services and communion and visit people. There's so many residents there whose families do not come and see them. They are treated like discarded members of organic matter in our society. There is deep wisdom. There is deep life to be learned and to be received. They're not only there as recipients of care. Take time to speak and to listen to the experience of our elder saints and you will be blown away. You will be gifted with opportunities and insight that you never imagined. Such is one of the gifts of this text, Simeon and Anna. Who noticed Anna? Who would have noticed her in the temple? Probably a crooked, frail old woman. There was not pensions in those days. There's not medical care that is available at the ready. You and I know, some of you by experience, others of us by witnessing vicariously, what happens as people age, the ailment and the challenges and the difficulties. Those would have been hers. Those would have been Simeon's. But there's something, if you look beyond what looks like non-usefulness anymore, there's a wisdom to be apprehended. Somehow, God may be speaking in ways that we have dismissed. It is the same for this child. I was talking with communicating with a family recently, talked about their return to the church, and it was their child who brought them. the child who has an insatiable inquisitiveness about things holy, things mysterious, things of God. The parents had perhaps long put that away or had reason not to be frequenting a place of worship any longer, but they could not withstand the incessant call and the invitation of this child about why God, who is God, why can't we worship, where can we go to find answers to these questions? A child. Sometimes it's the enthusiasm of a young that needs to teach us, that God uses to call attention to what is afoot. We look at what is happening around the world, largely a youth movement, challenging the status quo, the way things are. People, you and I feel a little bit uncomfortable, those of us maybe in upper years, but some of the young people, the teenagers, the young adults, are the ones taking action. Sustainable action, call and protest, willing to risk their lives to see the world change so that all will have enough, will have a part of what this country and this world affords, all people. So do you see, this text invites us to pay attention to those of all ages for what God may be disclosing. What is God disclosing that can bring us to respond to this crisis of decision? This Jesus is summoning us to respond. And the blessing. We mustn't forget the blessing. I've been reading a book called The Greatest Prayer in preparation for the Bible study I'm going to be doing this season. And it goes through line by line the Lord's Prayer. But one of the things that I appreciate about this particular book, the author's Crossan, he talks about this as the Lord's Prayer or the Our Father as the greatest prayer. Not as some triumphalistic statement from the Jewish Christian tradition, but he does put a challenge to any worldview or faith, as it were, through this. And this is what he writes. Finally, a word about my title, The Greatest Prayer. It is intended, first of all, within Christianity itself. It is surely our greatest prayer, whether we call it the Abba prayer or with the early Christians, or the Our Father with the Catholic community, or the Lord's Prayer with the Protestant tradition. It is certainly the official prayer of Christianity. But I also intend that title as a challenge to religions other than Christianity. I have absolutely no presumption that the greatest prayer of Christianity must be or even should be the greatest prayer for other religions. But I ask this of any and all of them. Does your own greatest prayer speak exclusively to the followers of your own religion? Or does it speak to the conscience of the entire world? I propose that the greatest prayer in every religion should speak to all the world and for all the earth. The subject of that prayer, this God who has come in Jesus, is intended for all the world. It is not provincial for this church, this denomination, this country for Christians. It is for all the world. And it is that we have come to celebrate. Why we began singing joy to the world, joy to the nations, joy to every age, joy to every circumstance. Joy in its ascendancy contends with those things that will try to squash it, despair and violence and wrong and evil. Joy to the world. Joy that takes seriously whatever circumstances of oppression we find ourselves in. Joy that even surpasses the happiness that comes from Christmas or events. Joy. This Christ, who is the subject of this prayer, the subject of this declaration by Simeon and Anna, this Christ is joy. Joy. How will you and I decide to respond to this joy? And so I want to leave you with some questions, and one particularly for you to steward in a moment of silence. I remember when I was a ministry intern in Alberta, and you're told, you go out and you're given leadership roles and you're just learning how to live into this identity as a minister, as it were, and you're in groups. And I remember hosting a group for the town in which I found myself on grief, because I came into a situation and found there was all kinds of hurting people. And I said, you know, we need to address this as a little town. And we gathered together. There were lots of people there. We were speaking back and forth in small groups. And there was a social worker who took me aside afterwards and said to me, very, very wise, I think, a young person too, she was young, said, really appreciate that you have called together this town to reflect and to wrestle with grief, because there's a lot of hurt here. And appreciate your leadership in the group that we were a part of, because it's important to help to raise this. But may I offer you something? The genius and the benefit of your leadership will be as much about what you contribute of obvious wisdom you have as what you refrain from saying and listen from others. At first, that kind of took me aback. I have to confess, I didn't receive that well. It kind of threw me off. But over the years, it is still something that I revisit. It is a word of wisdom that comes to remind us as we gather with one another. Our commitment to try to speak and to share what must be shared can sometimes prevent what God is disclosing through others that we must hear. So I'm still working on that. Still listening. So I want to provide space for listening. Because I would wish that I had the eyes like Simeon to see what is in front of me. And so we need the covenant to help each other see. I wish I had the eyes and the steadfastness of prayer and fasting of Anna, whose name means grace. So we need the covenant to help each other be steadfast in prayer and fasting and vigilance and announcing to the world. So, with me, take a moment. What one thing do you resolve and promise to God that you will allow God to use you for to help the world this year? What one thing are you willing to say, use me, God? I can do this in your power. Ponder that.